It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Hillary Clinton treatment is what I'm looking for. And that is no under oath, only a Q&A, and then we get the questions in advance, and they write the report 2 weeks before. I believe that after Judge Ellis's remarks, there's no question that the amount of government misconduct is accumulating. I happen to believe it's greater than anybody realizes. Very embarrassing to my former Justice Department, and very embarrassing not to FBI agents. Please, nobody's attacking FBI agents, the Justice Department lawyers. We're attacking the former leadership of both organizations.
Yes, Sandy Rios with you. That was Rudy Giuliani yesterday on This Week with George Stephanopoulos, at least in portion of what he said. And that comes on the heels of the former assistant director of the FBI, director James Kallstrom, who appeared with Tucker Carlson last Thursday night. If you didn't see that interview, it was amazing. In fact, we'll put it on our Facebook page. But this is basically what he said. I just think these people are out of control. He's talking about elements in the FBI. This is the former assistant director of the FBI, the guy that held, you know, disgraced McCabe's position. He says, from the very time that Donald Trump was the nominee of the Republican Party, there has been a conspiracy, a fifth column, call it what you want, that has tried to stop him from getting elected. And number two, stop his effective work for the people of this country. And then he goes on to say, we don't operate like that in the United States. If I were the head of the FBI, I would have not let the agents participate. My sources tell me John Brennan was leaking almost weekly or daily, and he was taking that bunch of phony crap, supposedly from Russia, peddling that through the Congress and the media, and he was one of the active people. I've known him a long time, and I think he's involved, said Kallstrom, again, former assistant director of the FBI. They are the people who committed felonies, not General Flynn. They've ruined Flynn because they threatened his son, you know. They bankrupted this guy. They gave his life to this country. That's just a portion of Kallstrom's interview, and honestly, it's stunning, and I would just recommend that you listen to that. And of course, in that opening clip with Rudy Giuliani, he referred to what happened on Friday with a federal judge. Actually, let me let Catherine Herridge kind of lay it out for you, then I'm going to fill in some of the blanks. Here she is.
All we hear about is this phony Russia witch hunt. That's all we hear about.
Speaking to the NRA in Texas, President Trump went off topic, setting a Virginia court hearing about his former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, who faces tax fraud and money laundering charges.
Just when I'm walking on the stage, a highly respected judge in Virginia made statements. It says, Wall Street Journal, it says, judge questions Mueller's authority to prosecute Manafort.
Federal Judge T.S. Ellis rebuked special counsel Robert Mueller's team, suggesting they lied about the scope of the investigation. You don't really care about Mr. Manafort's bank fraud, Judge Ellis said. You really care about what information Mr. Manafort can give you to lead you to Mr. Trump and an impeachment or prosecution.
How does this have anything to do with the campaign, the judge asked. Let me tell you, folks, we're all fighting battles, but I love fighting these battles. It's really a disgrace.
Before heading to Texas, the president took reporters' questions twice, emphasizing that no one wants to talk to Mueller more than he does.
I want to talk to the people in charge if they can prove that it's a fair situation.
At the same time, the president claimed the special counsel legal team is stacked against him.
The problem we have is that you have 13 people, they're all Democrats, and they're real Democrats, they're angry Democrats, and that's not a fair situation.
All right, that's the first part of Catherine's report from Special Report Friday. Now, here's the story about this Judge Ellis. You know, we're not used to getting judges to say anything that really supports the Constitution or the process, or certainly defends President Trump. So that's why this is just remarkable. And so this is Judge T.S. Ellis. And what happened was the Manafort people, have attorneys, have been trying to get the cases dropped against Paul Manafort. Remember, Paul Manafort was the guy whose home was raided. They picked the lock. They knocked, I don't know if they knocked down the doors, but they picked the lock. His wife was still in bed. They raided his home. You know, he's not a criminal. I mean, he's not like a mob boss. He's not like a killer, a murderer, a dangerous person. They went in with guns blazing. And it's just, this has been kind of the tactic of the Mueller team, to destroy people. They don't really care. So Manafort, of course, I don't know if he's innocent or guilty. I don't know his past. But look, we just know that this is not the way, as Kallstrom said, the FBI operates. He said he would not have sent his agents to do that. And the way they've treated Michael Flynn, claiming that he lied when other agents said he did not lie, charging him in court, sort of railroading this, that's a whole other story. The judge in the case overseeing the Flynn plea, which is what allegedly he pled guilty to lying, was a friend, Contreras, a friend to the FBI agent Peter Strzok, who hated Trump. And he and his mistress Lisa were texting back and forth about how to take down Trump. And the judge in the FISA court happened to be his buddy, the one that oversaw Flynn's thing, Flynn's case. It's just this. It really, really, really is unbelievable. But I want to go back to this judge, T.S. Ellis. So Manafort's people come before him asking again for, you know, that the charges be dropped, and the Mueller's people are arguing Manafort, you know, is whatever they say he is. And this is what Ellis says. I don't see what relationship this indictment has with anything the special counsel is authorized to investigate. Then he goes on to say that Mueller should not have unfettered power in his Russia probe, and that the charges against Manafort did not arise from the investigation into Moscow's alleged meddling in the 2016 election. It's unlikely you're going to persuade me the special counsel has unfettered power to do whatever he wants. None of the charges relate to Russia. Trump has denied any collusion. And I'm reading from the article now by Sarah Lynch. I want to make sure I just give Ellis's words. Manafort's attorney, Kevin Downing, has argued that the charges must be dismissed because the FBI investigation dates back to 2014 and therefore did not arise from Mueller's probe. And by the way, my understanding is that Paul Manafort, these charges that the special counsel is bringing against him have been investigated, and they did not bring charges. It's already been thoroughly investigated, so they're drumming it up again, just as a matter of record here. The bulk of Friday's questions by the judge were aimed squarely at Michael Dreeben, the deputy solicitor general currently working with Mueller. And this is Dreeben says to the judge, our investigation scope does cover the activity in the indictment. Cover bank fraud in 2005 and 2007? Tell me how, Ellis retorted. The federal judge in Washington, Amy Berman Jackson, has not yet ruled on the request to dismiss that indictment. There are two judges. There's a case in Washington. This Ellis case is in Virginia, both regarding Manafort. In both courtrooms, they're asking for the charges to be dropped. During the oral arguments, Ellis repeatedly chided Mueller's $10 million budget. He asked whether Rosenstein, who oversees the probe and is considered an important witness into whether Trump tried to obstruct justice, is recused from the case. And he repeatedly claimed that the indictment appeared to serve as a way for Mueller to assert leverage over Manafort. The vernacular, the judge said, is to sing. But he asked why a run-of-the-mill bank fraud case with no reference to any Russian individual or Russian bank could not be handed over to a U.S. attorney's office in the Eastern District of Virginia. And then he cited the case of Michael Cohen. Why does the special counsel need to do this? It's not related. Dreeben declined to discuss that. And it goes to Rosenstein's May 2017 order laying out the scope of the probe for Mueller. Dreeben told the judge, did not reveal all the details because they involve sensitive national security and counterintelligence matters that could not be divulged publicly, but were conveyed to Mueller. Ellis, the judge, balked, saying Dreeben's answer essentially means the Justice Department was not really telling the truth about the probe, and invites someone to respond by saying, come on, man. Ellis complained that the bulk of that August memo he has received was highly redacted. Remember, this is the same memo that leaders in Congress, the Congressional Intelligence Committee, Oversight Committee on this, is saying, give us the memo, not highly redacted. But this is the judge getting the same treatment. The judge directed Mueller's office to take 2 weeks to consult with U.S. intelligence agencies and see if they will sign off so that he can personally review a sealed, unredacted version of the memo. Dreeben, Mueller's guy, told him the redacted portions did not pertain to the Manafort case. Ellis responded, I'll be the judge. Okay, so the judge is demanding this. Devin Nunes, by the way, is threatening to hold Attorney General Sessions in contempt of court, contempt of Congress, because the Justice Department will not turn over that same memo unredacted either. They've received this unbelievably highly redacted memo that doesn't say anything, or at least it mentions just a few things. It's just almost all redacted. And they've demanded it, and the Justice Department hasn't delivered it. And in this article in Fox about this, Nunes, who did concede it's possible Sessions personally is unaware of the subpoena, told Fox and Friends he would not accept excuses relating to national security concerns in terms of his ongoing investigation of how the Russian probe was handled. Okay, so Nunes is putting the pressure on. The judge is putting the pressure on, and so are the House Freedom Caucus. They're demanding answers, too. And remember the smug response of Rosenstein last week that I played for you? If you haven't seen that, Adam, put that back on the on our Facebook page, too. I was just stunned by how he laughed and how he mocked the Freedom Caucus for wanting to see those memos and how they didn't have a right to see them. I mean, just I will not be extorted, or the Justice Department will not be extorted. He's simply being called to account for doing his job. He is not the Justice Department. He's just one man. The arrogance is just unbelievable. By the way, Brett Hume tweeted out the redacted version of Rosenstein's memo. That was just interesting. So people are on this, and they want to see it, and we'll find out what happens from that. Boy, there's so much more to tell you. I'm going to jump to this. John Kerry, unbelievably, is doing what we call, shadow diplomacy? So he's meeting with Iranian leaders, French leaders, European Union leaders, the German president, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, to try to save the Iranian deal. Remember, it was Kerry who brokered this $1.7 billion. He kind of hand-carried it to the Iranians. This was his baby boy, this horrible, no good, lousy, dangerous to us Iranian deal. This was John Kerry's baby. And I remember very much, you might not, but I remember John Kerry's daughter married the son of one of these diplomats. He's really close to the Iranians. And so he is doing this shadow diplomacy. And remember, Michael Flynn was accused by Sally Yates, who was the acting attorney general, of violating what was called the Logan Act. The Logan Act basically says that an unauthorized American person, U.S. person, cannot go do negotiations or undermine official negotiations on something international. Now, no one's ever been convicted for the Logan Act, but the irony that John Kerry is really and truly, remember Michael Flynn, that was his job at the time. It was transition team to make transition with foreign powers. That's what they always do. John Kerry has no authority. He's out of office. He's out of line. And it's interesting that that former lying Vietnam coward turncoat, John Kerry, which he was. Remember the Swift Boat veterans? Probably you don't, because many of you are too young. John Kerry was a liar. He came back to the United States after Vietnam and disparaged his fellow soldiers in such a disgraceful way. So now another Vietnam vet that reminds me of that, they called him Songbird because he worked with the Viet Cong. That was Senator John McCain. You probably haven't heard that because we're not allowed to talk about it, but that's why Vietnam veterans around the country have held him in disdain for a number of years, and now he's writing a book, making a movie, doing everything he can to destroy the presidency as he leaves. He's asked for Barack Obama to speak at his funeral, does not want Trump to attend, which that's fine with me because they have a dispute, but the damage this man's doing, also not resigning before June so that any special election can take place to fill his seat. He's a patriot, isn't he? Not really. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful, but then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in, and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered too, so why not? You can call right now. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims who lose everything.
It's truly a blessing. I really don't have the words to express.
And yet, they see a glimmer of hope when a volunteer shows up.
Building the home, that's the second reason we're here. The number one reason is to share the gospel and give them hope.
It's everything that's right in America. I mean, it really represents the best that we have to offer.
That's one of the main reasons for doing it, is being able to be the hands and feet of Jesus and coming out and working with so many wonderful volunteers.
I just feel like it's important in this day and age to teach a child how to serve.
Please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved. Submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well.
I love coming in the job room because you can see these pieces of paper, they aren't just a piece of paper.
Right.
It's a family that's hurting, and it's a gospel opportunity.
And I just thank God, you know, for this moment. I mean, I'll be back in my home, and I know it's going to be awesome.
Come love others with 8 Days of Hope.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today. From Fort Bragg, North Carolina, an Army chaplain faces a reprimand for refusing to violate his religious beliefs. Chaplain Scott Squires was accused of refusing to let a lesbian couple attend a marriage retreat. The Army determined the chaplain had discriminated against the soldier based on her sexual orientation. But First Liberty Institute, a law firm that represents the chaplain, says there's more to the story. Chaplain Squires is a Southern Baptist, and his denomination bars him from providing marriage counseling to same-sex couples. Had he allowed the couple to attend the retreat, he would have lost his endorsement. And under Army regulations, the chaplain must follow the rules of his endorsing agent. So in essence, Chaplain Squires is being punished by the Army for following the Army's own regulations. Regardless, the military contends the chaplain discriminated against the lesbian soldier and must be punished. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Good to see everybody.
The Indiana GOP primary is shaping up as the most expensive in the nation, and it is loaded with petty insults.
Todd the Fraud, Luke the Loon, the Swamp Brothers.
Nice to meet you. I'm running for the U.S. Senate.
Congressman Luke Messer, Congressman Todd Rokita, and businessman Mike Braun, a former state representative who campaigns as an outsider, all brand themselves as closest to the president.
That's why I back the Trump agenda in Congress.
I'm a pro-life, pro-Second Amendment conservative who supports President Trump.
I was working with the president to get him elected against crooked Hillary Clinton. Luke Messer was on the Clinton News Network, otherwise known as CNN, disparaging the president.
The president carried the Hoosier state by 19 points in 2016. Therefore, the incumbent, Democrat Senator Joe Donnelly, may be vulnerable. The seat could be a valuable pickup for the Grand Old Party in November. However, Democrats say with the nasty campaign, the Republicans are doing their opposition research for them.
And Mike Braun, this Democrat, raised our taxes 45 times.
Watchers suggest Republicans have done so much damage to each other, this right-leaning state is now a toss-up.
Whoever the nominee is should beat Donnelly. And that's why it was
troubling for the two of them when in the only public poll they were way off.
All that is certain is the White House sees Indiana as a place Republicans could gain some ground in the Senate.
The political wing of the White House is, I think, looking at this as the most important race in the country.
A White House official tells Fox News Senator Donnelly is targeted as one of several red state Democrat obstructionists. Just 2 days after the primary, President Trump and Vice President Mike Pence are coming to South Bend, Indiana, to trumpet their own accomplishments and to boost whichever Republican emerges from this race.
That was Mike Tobin on Fox on Friday. This is Sandy Rios, Thursday. This is Sandy Rios back with you. I want to talk about something that's very important, and that is tomorrow. If you live in Indiana, West Virginia, North Carolina, or Ohio, we have listeners in all of those states. You have a primary tomorrow, and I want you to listen up. And if those of you who don't live in those states, please listen, because your state is coming up soon, too. We'll try to cover them as best we can. And I've said to you repeatedly, I'll say it again, you get frustrated with the news, with me. You get frustrated by what's happening in Congress and not happening in Congress. Then this is your chance. It may not be making headlines right now, but trust me, this is your chance. If we're going to make a difference in this 2016 cycle to try to sort of steady the ship, as it were, this national American ship that we love so much, you have to vote. You have to take action. I want to just give you kind of set the table before we introduce our guest. The Democrats, I would say the left, you know, I don't really necessarily, I don't like to put this in party terms, but I have to. This is not really, to me, a fight between political parties. This is a fight for the survival of the nation. And the way I think of these things are people who want to undermine and destroy this country versus people who want to save it, the Constitutional Republic. So if I fall into the party monikers, it's just because that's what I have to describe people. But the Democrats, which is the left, it is the official left, can't get much more left than their platform or their people. They need a net gain of 23 seats to take back the House. And, of course, their big goal in taking back the House is to impeach President Donald Trump. In the Senate, the Republicans have a narrow edge, 51-49. But they have a more favorable playing field. There are Democrats defending 26 seats and just 8 Republicans defending their seats. But we all know how this is happening. We know what's happening in the news. We know what the left is doing, so it's much more complicated. Let me just also add, 47 House Republicans, including Speaker Paul Ryan, have announced their retirements. Now, there have been some replacements, but there are a lot more to go. And my understanding is there's something like 18 people around the country, candidates, who have said if they are elected, they will join the Freedom Caucus, which to me is the gold standard of congressmen serving. Oh, that they could all be part of the Freedom Caucus. Now, Daniel Horowitz is with Conservative Review, which is a place that I trust when it comes to evaluating candidates. So I've asked Daniel to join us this morning. Good morning, Daniel.
Hey, great to be with you, Sandy.
I'm grateful to have you, Daniel. And let me just ask you, and I've given a pretty good overview there, but is there anything further that you would say about what's at stake here?
No, I mean, you're right, but the problem is most people are sleeping. Yeah, you know, I'll give you a stat you probably won't hear anywhere else. There are 17 sitting Republican congressmen who will stand for re-election Tuesday night among those 4 states, and they're still running for re-election. Some of them are retiring or running for Senate, but 17 among the House members who voted for the omnibus bill. Now, you would expect that was an act of political adultery beyond belief if you're a Republican. It's like being a Democrat, that every one of them would have a serious challenge. And I'll tell you, it's very likely every one of them will survive.
Okay, because we're not paying attention. Because people don't, it's not being emphasized, Daniel. You know that. I think that the establishment, including the news we trust, Moch, Fox, would not necessarily want us to go after the establishment candidates. And so we don't hear about that. And so that's why we're talking this morning. You know, what I'd like to do first, Daniel, if it's okay with you, can we, since the Senate races are fewer, let's concentrate on those first for tomorrow.
Sure.
Okay? All right, let's go to West Virginia and tell us what's laid out for us.
Sure. I mean, from a conservative perspective, the Senate is always tough. It's very hard to find stars running for Senate, as hard as it is finding for House. I mean, what I see there is basically you have a pure establishment candidate in Evan Jenkins. Evan Jenkins is a sitting House member from Charleston, South Carolina area. It's the southern part of West Virginia. He voted for the omnibus. He is a pure rhino.
And he's a Democrat. He's been a Democrat for decades.
Oh, yeah.
Voted for
yeah,
Barack Obama, actually.
And then the other candidate is the state attorney general, Patrick Morrissey. You know, he has support of the Senate Conservative Fund. He is clearly going to be a little bit more independent from leadership than him. But on a personal level, I don't see him being on the level of a Cruz or Paul, even though he's gotten a lot of those endorsements. But a clear difference there. And then you have, obviously, the candidate everyone's talking about and for whom Donald Trump just issued a tweet a couple of minutes ago, and that's this businessman, Cole Barron, who spent a year in federal prison, Blankmanship. And he's really been surging recently, and it appears that there's dueling polls that any one of them shows potentially one of the three leading. So I think it's a clear toss-up. You know, whenever you have a three-way race, it's just wild. So Don Blankmanship, you know, obviously he's very wealthy, a tremendous amount of money. I believe he spent more money than almost the other two candidates combined. So despite his tremendous baggage, he is leading. And, you know, Sandy, let me just tell you, as someone who has tried to recruit candidates, I mean, you know, I recruited against Mitch McConnell and Ben Cochran and people like that. What's so frustrating is a lot of us are caught between a rock and a hard place, that among those who have a promising political career and they're more put-together candidates, a lot of them are just pansies. I mean, they just won't challenge the system, even the ones that kind of claim they will. And then what we're getting now is a cadre of people like Blankmanship that are just kind of off the wall, but they're promising to just stick it to McConnell. They openly run ads against him, and it resonates with people. Now, you know, a lot of people in our circles are fighting about this. Well, this is horrible. He's crazy. Or, no, it's good he's going after McConnell. But I think there's a point to be made here that where is this angst coming from? And until you address people's desires, really, in the Republican primary, for a Republican Party that will actually counter the Democrats and actually have a vision on the issues, you're going to have, I mean, for no better term, you're going to have this chemotherapy where you're going to have some of these candidates that are kind of wild. And, yeah, I wish we had better candidates, but this is what you get when the so-called respectable candidates don't really speak to where people are.
So, in all right, but practically speaking, Daniel, in terms of your own ranking, I mean, I don't know if you with your rankings, do you consider anything beyond votes? Do you consider public statements? I mean, how do you handle somebody like Don Blankmanship who doesn't have a record?
So to be clear, I mean, we're not that amazing this year that we have up for every Senate candidate. That was presidential candidates. We had profiles. As far as this year, it's only for those who serve in elected office. So obviously, Blankmanship, you know, this guy never served in anything. And, you know, Morrissey is a state attorney general. Now, you know, he did lead some lawsuits against the Obama administration, and he does have a pretty good record, like I said, a lot better than Jenkins. But when it comes to Jenkins, I mean, he has an F. He is a sitting congressman. That you could take to the bank.
He says, you said he has an F, just to repeat that. Evan Jenkins has an F in your ratings.
Voted for the omnibus bill. So,
yes.
I mean, you don't need to look into some sort of crystal ball to see where he is. So he cannot be allowed to win. I mean, that is going to be another rhino vote. You know, the other senator you have from the state, Shelley Moore Capito, she is a pro-abortion Republican from the state of West Virginia that is so pro-life. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. All right, so Joe Manchin is the guy who holds the seat. The challengers now, then, as Daniel has just outlined it, Patrick Morrissey, the attorney general, he has the support of Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, and Don Blankenship is the outlier. I don't exactly know. My understanding is that he's pretty conservative. He certainly is conservative on pro-life. I don't know where he is on other issues. He's kind of like the... He's like the West Virginia guy. He really is, but he's an unpolished candidate, and people are concerned that he might not be able to prevail against Joe Manchin. I think that's the big concern. But let me just say the American Family Association has a voter guide in which we do consider other things besides voting record. We consider public statements. So AFA Action, you can get our voter guide and figure out in that race, and we just beg you to go out and vote for the best conservative in that race, which Senate Conservatives Fund, Ted Cruz, and Rand Paul believe is Patrick Morrissey. Now, so I'm just saying. Okay, so that's West Virginia. Let's go to Indiana, Daniel, and tell us what you think about there. Joe Donnelly is the sitting senator. He's the Democratic senator. So what's going on in the primary then for Republicans?
So again, obviously, Joe Donnelly should be very vulnerable. He tries to pretend to be a moderate Democrat, but I mean, there's not a single issue where he legitimately dissents from the left party line. So he should be really, really vulnerable. Now, this race started off, everyone thought, you know, you would have two big Republican congressmen, well-known in their districts, vying for the seat. You got Luke Messer and Todd Rakita. So it started off as a two-man race. Luke Messer, again, is kind of like Evan Jenkins in West Virginia. Real establishment guy, voted for the omnibus bill. Todd Rakita is clearly a step above him. Again, kind of like Morrissey, clearly better, but I just don't see him being top tier. I mean, he hasn't been top tier in the House. But what's happened is the two of them have just torn each other apart. Each one going out more than the other. And by the way, just for your records, Rakita has a 65% on our scorecard, and Messer is a 58%. But I would argue the gulf is a little bigger. Rakita's been tough on immigration. And by the way, just what's an important observation that your listeners need to understand is that the Indiana Senate race is a perfect example of free markets at work. When it comes to competitive primary in a Republican state, boy, oh boy, is everyone a conservative when it comes to the primary. I mean, Rakita introduces a bill to implement jail time for sanctuary city leaders. Then Messer responds with a bill to cut off funding to block grant programs to sanctuary cities. So, you know, it's amazing what happens when at least you have a competitive primary. So that at least is a good thing. What happened in that race is that they tore each other down so much that this state representative, Mike Braun, who is personally very wealthy as a businessman, he came in there and just bought himself name ID. Again, spent more than that. So it's kind of interesting. Almost a mirror image of West Virginia, where you have two well-known politicians. One's pure establishment, one's clearly better, but not, you know, amazing for conservatives. And then a businessman, wealthy outsider comes in, and he's surging. So I think it's very possible that Mike Braun would win. I like a lot of what I'm hearing from him, but again, you know, he did raise taxes when he was in the legislature. So, you know, I'm just, unfortunately, from my perspective, and you know I have a pretty strict grading scale, I just don't see a star in these races.
Yeah, you know, this in reading about Mike Braun, I have no opinion either. I don't know. I was hoping we would know more about him. He said this in a recent debate. He said, at my stage in the game, I'm doing it because I'm fed up with business as usual, and I'm not going to be beholden to anyone. Well, that sounds good to all of us, but he has been a Democrat. I think he's voted in Democratic primaries for several years. So I don't know what that means about his politics. It is possible to be very conservative in Southern Indiana and be a Democrat, as it has been around the country. But I just don't know. I wish we knew more about him, Daniel. We haven't even touched Ohio, and nobody's saying anything about North Carolina. And I want to know what your thoughts about those states. And then we have all the congressional races. So we have a lot to talk about. My guest is Daniel Horowitz from Conservative Review. They are a great reliable source for ratings of sitting congressmen. And American Family Association, AFA, has a great voter guide for this primary tomorrow. So go on AFA.net and access that, and that will help you kind of figure out the puzzle. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
If the world hates you, you know that it has hated me before it hated you. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Jeff Myers, president of Summit Ministries, which is one of the nation's premier biblical worldview development ministries for teens and young adults, called California Assembly Bill 2943 the most blatant chilling of free speech in America he's ever seen in his lifetime. The bill, which seeks to criminalize the conveyance of the biblical teaching on human sexuality, places Summit Ministries staff in legal jeopardy. Consequently, Summit has canceled the conferences it planned to hold in California, saying we cannot and will not bend God's truth to accommodate California.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman.
So who is responsible for the dysfunction in Washington? That's what we're going to be discussing today.
We have become one of the most litigious societies on the planet.
The goal of this show is to bring clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C., and to expose the deception that has plagued our nation's capital for decades.
Exposing Washington.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central.
On American Family Radio.
Many couples are struggling, disillusioned, and disappointed, but marriage doesn't have to be that way. On the next Focus on the Family, Dr. Larry Crabb gets to the root of the problem, selfishness, and points to God's heart for men and women to enjoy true oneness in marriage. That's next time on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Focus on the Family is heard each weekday morning at 5 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
Are you personally offended by foul language on television? Even well-written, well-acted programming may be riddled with profanity and undesirable dialogue. The TV Guardian app is technology that mutes and replaces profanity, sexual references, and sacrilegious language from television programs and movies. You see, programmers are required to provide closed captioning. TV Guardian uses the closed caption to look ahead, find the offensive language, mute it, and replace the phrasing in the caption. Users of the TV Guardian app can set the filters for their family's needs, using strict, moderate, or tolerant settings, with or without filtering for religious or sexual references. The TV Guardian app is now providing profanity-free programming. Information is available at tvguardian.com/dish. TV Guardian. .com/dish.
American Family Radio is thankful for the support of TV Guardian.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. John Kerry was a terrible Secretary of State. Among other disasters, he led the negotiation of a, quote, political understanding, unquote, with Iran concerning its covert nuclear weapons program. President Trump has rightly described it as the worst deal in history. That's because Mr. Kerry capitulated to the mullah's demands on virtually every point. It got so bad that our European allies complained that Kerry's delegation behaved like lawyers for the Iranians. Now we learn that John Kerry is still serving as an advocate for a country whose official policy is death to America. He appears to be violating the law by secretly meeting with officials in Iran and Europe to try to undermine President Trump, who rightly believes we should stop pretending the so-called Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action prevents an Iranian bomb, when in fact this Obama bomb deal actually enables it. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. We're talking about the primaries tomorrow, and again, they are in the following states, and Indiana, West Virginia, North Carolina, and Ohio. West Virginia has an interesting situation. Joe Manchin is the sitting senator. Patrick Morrissey is endorsed by Cruz, Paul, and Senate Conservatives Fund. He is the attorney general of the state. Don Blankenship is kind of the latecomer, kind of really waking things up, sort of stirring things up a little bit. So we'll see what happens there. And then in the state of Indiana, we've got Luke Messer is the establishment candidate. Todd Rokita is slightly better, as Daniel Horwich just described to us. He has a 65 percent favorable rating for Conservative Review. That's not terrific. Mike Brown is the self-financed businessman who's just thrown his hat in the ring, and we need to know more about him. But AFA, again, has a voter guide. Please go to that, and that will help you kind of determine who the best, most conservative candidate based on the public statements and their record in that state. Daniel Horowitz, again, my guest from Conservative Review. Daniel, let's move to Ohio, if we could, because that's another Senate race. Sherrod Brown is he's a really radical leftist in that seat. So what are the choices in the Senate race there?
Sure. Again, similar situation. You got to start off with the establishment candidate, Congressman Jim Renacci. Let me just give you background here. This race is a real heartbreaker for a lot of conservatives because, like I said, I am really not seeing stars this entire cycle. And there's a lot of really good red, purple-red states that we should have opportunities in, and I'm not seeing good candidates. Despite the betrayals, I was joking around with some colleagues here. When we tried to solicit statements from different candidates after the omnibus, you would think in the middle of a primary, when everyone's trying to be more conservative than the next, they would clamor to give us a statement, and we couldn't even see them independently putting out statements. A lot of candidates, I'm just saying throughout the country. In Ohio was the one opportunity we really had with Josh Mandel, and he was the state treasurer for a while. He was a good conservative. Senate Conservatives Fund was supporting him. He basically cleared the field, and that was one of the few kind of consensus cases where you had someone that was accessible to conservatives, but the establishment didn't field their candidate, and everyone was going to coalesce around it. His wife developed some sort of illness, and he had to pull out. It was just really sad. So that's when Jim Renacci came in. Real rhino congressman, has $5 million in his bank account. This guy, Mike Gibbons, is the other candidate. Again, a wealthy businessman, never served. He's kind of trying to run as the Trump, the outsider. From what I've seen from everyone I've spoken to in the state, there's no real evidence he's a solid conservative. Again, if you're a conservative, it's either Gibbons or Renacci. Renacci, he has a very long track record in the House as a rhino. So I think, 100% he's going to be a yes man for McConnell. He's going to be just like Rob Portman, who's sometimes to the left of Mitch McConnell. So I'd say Gibbons, at least, you can't get any worse than the status quo. But again, it's very disappointing. We're not moving the ball forward.
But let me just add, Daniel, in spite of that assessment, and I don't doubt that at all, and because I do trust your judgment, but what we do want, I personally, this is what I want. I want people to vote tomorrow. And I want them to understand that there is a choice in the sense that some of these guys are blatantly terrible, like you mentioned, Jim Renacci. And so in order to not have him be elected again, Mike Gibbons, as I understand, is... people that I know that are really conservative, I think are actually supporting him. So are some choices there. So I don't want people not to go out because they are because there aren't stellar candidates. There are better choices. So we have to. It's a case of voting for the better, not necessarily the stellar. So
Sandy, if I can add a point, a lot of times conservatives do plug in for the election and then they drop it the day after. The grassroots need to be very careful Wednesday morning. If you do have a situation where some of these outsiders win, the football analogy I would use is you didn't win. You recovered possession of the ball. Now you got to get to them and make sure the establishment doesn't get to them. And I think there's potential with someone like a Gibbons and Mike Braun in Indiana, heck, a Blankenship in West Virginia. But if you don't, they tend to drift because, unless they come in and have a demonstrated record where they're smart on the issues, they get it and they plan on fighting for it. So it's definitely much better to have a fighting chance than to lose right away with a guy like Renacci.
Yeah, exactly. And now, you know what? I hear nothing about North Carolina. Is there nothing happening in North Carolina in the Senate race?
So here's the thing for your listeners. There's no statewide election. They're just, no one's up, no governor, no senator. Here's the one important election, and this is critical. Someone who would be a champion of American Family Association values is Mark Harris is challenging Congressman Robert Pittenger in District 9. Mark Harris is the guy who led and spearheaded the marriage amendment in North Carolina. If you remember, that was the last successful effort to secure marriage from those seeking to redefine it. And it passed with 61%, despite all odds. And then, unfortunately, we had the courts come in and our Democratic Republic with that decision. But Mark Harris, it would be a guy who works with Meadows. Look, Meadows isn't going to publicly endorse against a sitting incumbent in from a state, but I could, be pretty confident he's hoping Mark Harris wins. Mark Harris has spent about $500,000. Now, it's nothing compared to the $1.2 million from Pittenger, but if you look at every other challenger, they usually have $10,000, $20,000 to their name. So I think if there is one chance Tuesday night and possibly during the entire election season to knock off a single incumbent, it's that District 9 race. Watch very carefully for that.
You know, actually, Mark Harris has been on our show more than once, and I didn't even realize he was up tomorrow. That's how it's just so hard to keep track of the hundreds of people that are running. So I'm glad you mentioned that, Daniel. All right, now let's go back, and I'm going to count on you to now highlight where are there some really fine conservatives running in addition to Mark Harris in these other primaries tomorrow that we need to know about.
I'm telling you, you're really putting me on the spot here.
I know. Sorry about that. Well, let me go to Ohio. Let me talk for a second while you look.
Sure.
Because I do know in Ohio there are two candidates that have been endorsed by Jim Jordan. And that is Melanie Lenigan in Ohio's 12th. That's John Kasich's old district. And then Christina Hagan, who is Ohio's 16th. Jim Renacki, who's running for Senate, has vacated that seat. And so she has been endorsed by Jim Jordan, just for the record. Okay, now your turn, Daniel.
No, bingo. You said it all. I mean, that's okay. Pretty much it. That Ohio has a tremendous amount of Republican members of Congress. I mean, I'm thinking 12 maybe. It's a pretty big delegation. And, you got Jim Jordan on one end, and then you also have from the western side of the state, you got her buddy, and I'm losing it here with so many names here. It will come back to me. It was John Boehner's seat. We actually flipped.
Oh, yeah. Warren?
Warren Davidson. He's a friend of mine. It's pretty embarrassing, and he'd be upset at me. Davidson. So those are the two conservatives from the state. The rest of them are really, maybe they're not all as bad as John Kasich, but it's a pretty tough delegation. So you got two rhinos retiring, Pat Tiberi in District 12, and then in District 16, you got Renacci, who's obviously vacating to run for Senate. That is exactly the point. So District 16, you got Christina Hagan. She is, she's along the lines of a Trump, but a state rep. She knows the issues. She's good. She's just outspent 4-1 by Anthony Gonzalez, real establishment guy. That is a classic Kevin McCarthy versus Jim Jordan proxy race. She's going to have an uphill battle, but it's possible. I do think in District 12, there is a chance because there's no 800-pound gorilla in the room. Melanie Lonergan has raised a nice amount of money relative to any other candidate. Troy Balderson, he's a state senator, rhino from there. There's a guy, Tim Kaine, not to be mixed up with a Republican. That's kind of wide open between three or four candidates. Look for Lonergan there. That would be important. And look, as of now, there's only one female Freedom Caucus member. So
the one from Arizona that just got elected, right?
Yeah, and there was zero. Now there's one. So potentially we could add two there. Those are two to watch. Outside of that, it's really slim pickings. The Evan Jenkins seat in West Virginia, I'm not seeing anyone good. There is a good guy I had on my show from Indiana running against Larry Bouchon. His name is Dr. Moss. But it's tough. I mean, he maybe has $100,000 against over $1 million. Let me just end by saying this is why I believe we need to go to the Utah convention model. Most people don't even know all the Senate candidates. They certainly don't know the House candidates. And it's always the guy with the most money and name recognition who wins. And that's usually the guy that we don't like. And I think if you had a state convention where the activists know who you are, it's a level playing field. Money doesn't matter as much because you don't have to convince millions of people. I really think that's what we need to do, because otherwise, despite the betrayals on Obamacare and immigration and the budget and all sorts of issues, almost every one of these guys, like I said, there's 17 people who voted for the omnibus bill running for re-election. Pittenger is really the only guy I see vulnerable.
Yeah, I agree with you long term. I would say this as a sort of a silver lining to a dark cloud. You know, Jeannie Ives, who was a state rep in Illinois, who only had a very, very small budget, almost toppled the sitting governor, who had millions, which he spent against her. And Jeannie is a conservative running red meat ads about social issues in a very blue state. And Jeannie, I think, came in with 49% of the vote. So it's just, it can be done, but it's hard. And I need to mention that in Ohio, there's also governor's race. Mike DeWine is, I'm talking about the primary. A standoff between Mike DeWine and Mary Taylor. Mike, of course, is a congressman who's been around for a long time, but he's a rhino. In fact, Breitbart has an article about how he cooperated with the Muslim Brotherhood in Ohio. And it sort of chronicles that. Mary Taylor is his opponent in the primary. That's another important race. Mary has the support of a lot of conservatives in Ohio. Anything else that we need to know, Daniel, about tomorrow's races?
Well, yeah, you covered a lot there. And again, Mike DeWine, I cannot overstate the importance of defeating him. He is now pro-gun control. And I don't know if you remember during the Bush years, DeWine was one of the Olympia Snows and Susan Collinses that scuttled everything. And that's when we had officially 55 seats in the Senate. He was forever blocking things, very, very liberal, in the mold of a John Kasich. He's going to be a steward for the big hospital, big insurance companies on the Medicaid expansion. That is a very important state to have in our hands. And yeah, Mary Taylor is certainly at least a couple notches better than that.
All right, let me just repeat again, practically speaking. Please go to the AFA's voter guide before tomorrow's election. That's AFA Action, American Family Association voter guide, which is very comprehensive. It will help you tremendously in trying to sort these things out. Daniel, do you think that the Senate is in any danger of being, what do you think might happen there? Any predictions? Not tomorrow, of course, it's just the primary, but it's with McCain's situation and all the things in flux, what do you think is going to be happening in the Senate in 2016?
Sure. Well, first of all, let's just be clear. The Democrats control the Senate. I mean, as of now, I mean, it's narrow on an R versus D. And I mean, we could list 10 to 20 to 30 Republicans that are just very problematic. So, I mean, they control the agenda. Now, if you want to talk about officially, well, I guess maybe judicial nominees, a couple of differences, they're not as likely to lose it as the House, but it can happen. I mean, they could lose Arizona. They could lose Nevada. So the seats are out there. It would take a lot of talent. It's kind of being up 5-0 at the bottom of the ninth inning. The landscape of the Senate map is so much in favor of Republicans because Democrats have so many more vulnerable seats.
Yeah, but 20 seconds here.
They're not guaranteed to pick up a single seat necessarily, and they could lose the two that are vulnerable on their end, so they theoretically could flip it.
Okay, so then it's back to the American people, and actually we still do have control. We still have power. I don't know how, but God has given us a little bit more, so be sure and exercise your right as an American citizen to vote tomorrow. Conservative Review is a great resource. Daniel Horowitz, thank you so much. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.